Senator Elton, myself, Senator Torgerson. We are going to roll down the agenda as posted. First bill up is Senate Bill 136. That was introduced by the Resources Committee. It's an act relating to resource development and to grants for the purposes of promoting resource development from appropriations of a portion of the revenue derived from extraction of certain state natural resources. Our two presenters will come up and give us the thrust of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Carter, legislative assistant to Senator Drew Pierce. So we start with Senate Bill 136 as where it began. It was a concept that I had on a driving home from work one day. And I came back and discussed it with Senator Pierce, and after several modifications to it, she found it to have merit, and we drafted it and then presented it to Senator Torgerson for a resource bill. Anyway, the concept of what I was considering was that I found that Alaska is being very unique as a owner state, and as our resources are all held in trust to benefit all of Alaskans, I felt that we were kind of in a unique situation where it put us in the, we're almost like a shareholder within a business. And when it comes to resource extraction, we currently rely on our business partners, industry, to promote that resource extraction. The problem with that is that our partners can go and sometimes do go elsewhere to conduct their business. We do not have that option. So if we begin with the premise that Alaska's economy is going to be relying upon resource extraction for the foreseeable future, it seems that it would be a wise investment then to financially support that and promote such activities. We've had recent studies that have shown that our resource extraction industry, as well as our tourism industry, have played a significant role in our workforce and therefore our economy. However, the vast majority of the economic impacts from the tourism industry are seasonal and are generally low-paying jobs. These studies show that a diversified economy is necessary to sustain a healthy economy. The majority of the environmental community, however, does not agree with that concept, as they continue to oppose nearly all development of our resources while offering no economic alternative. We need to strike a balance between development and protection of the environment and avoid the extreme positions of locking up everything. We feel that the best way to protect Alaska's environment is through a strong and diversified economy. We invest in our tourism industry and our seafood industry, as well as opening the coastal plain of Amwar to responsible development in order to benefit our economy. We believe that it would also be a wise and prudent investment to invest in our diversified mineral resources as timber, as well as oil and gas development. By creating the Resource Development Board, we will further our constitutional mandate of developing our resources by making them available for maximum use in an environmentally responsible manner. I'd be willing to answer any questions that the committee members may have.
Questions? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And before I ask the question, is DNR going to testify also on the
bill? I would hope they would. We do have somebody from DNR signed up.
Pat, the first question, some preliminary figures that I've gotten indicate that this fund would be capitalized about 99.6% from the oil and gas industry, with 0.4% being from the mineral industry and nothing from the timber industry. Does that sound right to you?
That sounds very close, yes.
I guess, can I keep going, Mr. Sure.
Go ahead, Senator Elton.
I guess that my first reaction to that is that I have a, I guess it's not in my nature to support something in which we're going to go out, we're going to try and increase the amount of business, but we increase the amount of business and we're still not going to get anything from it. And it seems to me somewhat unfair to tap the oil and gas industry exclusively for funding of this effort, and yet some of the benefits are going to be reaped by industries that aren't kicking anything in.
Is that a question? No, it's not.
I guess I'm leading up to the question, and the way the board is structured, two of the seats would be from the oil and gas community, and up to five of the seats would not be from, or could conceivably not be from the oil and gas community. And I guess I'm wondering how you got to the seat allocation issue if almost 100% of it is being funded by one industry. Why do you have designated seats for the other industries?
To the chair, Senator Elton, when considering that, been forming the bill, we had discussed very early on about the possibility of the money being distributed according to industry. And we just, as I said, very early in discussion, we had that conversation. But it's almost is contrary to the intent of the legislation that in order to have a healthy economy, we need to have a diversified economy. We hear from the oil and gas industry continually that they get tired of being the sole source of funding for government. We used to have a healthy timber industry in Southeast Alaska. And in the last 8 years, despite being open for business, we have seen a great decline in our timber industry in Alaska. I think that with reasonable, responsible development of our timber industry, we can once again develop a healthy timber industry. But without any revenues to promote that activity, for instance I'll give you in the timber industry is they have a document out now that Jack Phelps shared with me at RDC this fall, and what it talks about is what at the time President Clinton was considering the roadless policy being adopted in the Tongass, and absent the roadless policy being adopted, the message that they were sharing was that if you took all of the Tongass open for development under the existing Forest Practices Act, less than 1 inch of the Tongass of a football field, if you compared it as a football field, less than 1 inch of that would be able to be harvested per year without the roadless policy. I think those type of things are things that people can understand. When you start talking about all the diversification of the ecology and the biodiversity throughout the Tongass, you very quickly get lost in the morass of what's true and what's not true. And I think that the timber industry has suffered greatly at the hands of misinformation. And they certainly have done, you know, their practices in the past have been, I've set chokers behind cats before. I know what used to happen 30 years ago. It wasn't a pretty picture. But I think that like the mining industry and like the oil and gas industry, we've changed the way that they do business, and it's far more environmentally sensitive, and I think it's important to be able to get that message out.
I guess you're talking about the problems in the timber industry, and I mean it would be equally easy, I think, to point to problems in the fishing industry.
Sure.
Stellar sea lion issues, transboundary issues. What kind of thought process went into the bill that says, well, we're going to include the resource industries of mining, timber, and oil and gas, but we're not going to include the resource industry of the fishing?
Well, we considered fishing, and we considered tourism, and we considered all of the things that fuel Alaska's economy. But we have ASME already established with for seafood marketing. We already have a tourism marketing council. We have and we have an agricultural board because we also considered the farmers and what they bring to the state's economy.
Just a comment as on that response. I mean, I understand that we do have an ASME that is receiving no general fund dollars for any of its promotions, and the money that they receive now is raised from a tax on salmon harvesters. It's raised on a tax on land-based processors and on ocean-based processors. The money is laundered through the general fund, but in fact, the money being used for promotions is coming from the industry, which is significantly different than this. And I think that they would probably appreciate the opportunity to tap directly into general fund dollars like they used to be able to.
Well, Senator Elton, they may not have a member on the board, but that doesn't preclude them from receiving a grant. You may be getting the two confused. The duties of the board are to grant to any nonprofit that is doing resource development. It doesn't say not fish, not trees, or all gas.
I realize that, Mr. Chair. However, if in fact you did want to include the fishing industry, the 0.25% you collect from the fishing industry fees would raise about 17 times what timber and minerals would raise. And so I think that there is an advantage to including the timber or to including the fishing industry along with the other industries, and it's to also tap into the kinds of money that they could contribute to the effort.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, there wasn't an effort to exclude a particular industry as we discussed the importance. We just felt that it was redundant. And when you talk about the taxes that are raised and they're laundered through the GF, through landing taxes, raw fish taxes, we could also point to the taxes that we're talking about that are being generated by the oil and gas industry through severance taxes and through royalties and lease sales, and all those things are along those same lines and being laundered through the GF.
I guess, Pat, the distinction is that for the marketing and the education effort, they're being paid for directly by the harvesters and directly by the offshore processors and the onshore processors on a tax with taxes that disappear if, in fact, the salmon harvesters don't want to pay it anymore, or if, in fact, half of the processors vote and say that this program doesn't work, therefore we're taking our money out.
Is it because they're not forced to do it? It's not.
The processor tax is established by a vote of 50% plus one of the processors, and the harvester tax is established by the legislature and renewed every 3 years. It sunsets every 3 years, and presumably if the fishing industry doesn't like it or the fish harvesters don't like it, it goes away.
Senator Pierce.
I'm trying to understand where Senator Elton is going with this. Are you asking that we add the fishing industry to this and take additional taxes from them, or take an additional something from them for this sort of fund?
I kind of am, Senator Pierce, although I don't see it as taking additional money from them. I think that if you applied the same formula to the fishing industry that you're applying to these, it would not be an increase in taxes on the industry. It would be just a diversion of 0.25% of taxes that they're already paying.
Of which tax?
The landing tax? It would be everything from the landing tax to the raw fish tax to the marine fuel tax to the other taxes that are assessed against the industry.
Thank you.
Just a point of clarification to the chair, Senator Elton, are you asking that that money that would then be going into GF and therefore onto ASME be diverted then and go to, because right now I think seafood is getting about $6.9 million into ASME, the GF money?
I think, Mr. Chair, the harvester assessment raises about between $2 million and $2.4 million each year, depending upon the value of the product landed. The assessment on the processors raises someplace between 3 and 4. And I'm not suggesting that is a tax or that is an assessment that has the word may, as this bill does. I'm looking at the revenues that are similar to the revenues that you're looking at from the other resource industries that are paid, for example, a landing tax, raw fish taxes, marine fuel taxes, the other assessments that are on the industry, not those assessments that are voluntary assessments and that are renewed periodically.
Senator Pierce.
That's it for now, Mr. Chair.
And then you would, you think that they ought to have a seat on the board then? Is that the other part of your?
I would think so. I think that anybody probably should have a seat on the board. The difficulty would be that, unlike some of the other resource extractive industries that are listed here, is that there is no central statewide association. There are several associations that represent the fish harvesters, and there are a couple anyway that represent the fish processors. So the point of the group that would recommend three names might be more difficult to identify.
Mr. Taylor?
Is that we still have to come where it's resource, no leases or any rallies and imposing additional assessment fishermen so they can put something in the spot when they do it?
Through the chair to Senator Taylor, no. My understanding of this bill is it creates no new money. What it does is it just diverts a quarter of a percent from the existing monies that are coming in from the other resource industries. And I would expect that if, in fact, we did in the fishing industry, that you would just divert a quarter of a percent from the revenues that are already coming in. It would not be new money, but you would have to expand the bill to include those fees and assessments that are coming into the state now. Mr. Chair, I'm not suggesting anything, and I wouldn't presume to suggest it until I talk to the industry. It just seems to me that if we're going to do this for the other industries and divert $2.6 million out of the general fund for this kind of a marketing educational effort, that because the fishing industry puts in a lot of money too, that they might want to participate in that diversion. It would mean that they would be paying no more new money. We would just be diverting 0.25% of the fees that they're already paying so that they could participate through this grant program.
Further questions for testifier? Okay, thank you. Well, we have a couple folks signed up. Let's do Sue Schrader first.
My name is Susan Schrader. I'm with Alaska Conservation Alliance and Alaska Conservation Voters. These two groups are sister nonprofit organizations dedicated to protecting Alaska's environment through our public education and advocacy work. Our 44 member organizations and businesses represent over 35,000 registered Alaskan voters who, like most Alaskans, work hard to support our families. Conservationists throughout the state are committed, have been committed, will continue to be committed to maintaining a healthy economy for the benefits that it provides all Alaskans. We do believe strongly that the state can enjoy a healthy economy without sacrificing our clean air, our clean water, our salmon habitat, and our wild lands. And we also believe that resource development industries can prosper and they can meet their shareholders' expectations while complying fully with state and federal laws that protect the environment. The concept of using general funds for grants to nonprofits that are going to be promoting for-profit industries, many of whom are huge non-international corporations that employ significant numbers of non-residents, is rather nonsensical. We believe most Alaskans will not endorse this idea of taking state revenues that could go to improving education, social services, filling potholes on their roads, or any other number of significant needs, and using these monies to do the promotion and the advertising work that the resource industry can clearly do for themselves. We do have a concern that as the makeup of the board is right now, there is obviously not a seat there provided for a representative from a conservation group. If the sponsors are truly seeking to promote responsible development while protecting the environment, we believe clearly that a seat for an environmentalist should be on this board. As one small example, the mining industry in Alaska has been reported in an Anchorage Daily News article of being valued at $1.12 billion in 1999. At the same time, from a Department of Labor report, we see that 30.7% of their workforce in Alaska are non-resident. We really don't think Alaskan families should be asked to help pay this industry's advertising bill. We urge you to oppose this legislation.
Thank you. Senator Pierce.
Thank you. Why do you think the bill pays for an advertising bill? That's not what the bill does.
Senator Pierce, through the chair, in the sponsor statement, and I'm sorry, I don't have it here with me, it speaks of what the grants would be used for, what the nonprofits would be using the money and grants for. Promotion, education, advertising. I believe there are a number of different items listed in the sponsor statement. There's some language in the bill also relating to what the grants would be.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
what a long day with names.
Page 3 of the bill, line 20. That the grants could be used for conducting market research, advertising, promotion, and education.
Mr. Chairman, that is not advertising, though, for a company or for it is for general sales of a resource, not for a company. Why do you think that one has to have a specific person appointed by an environmental organization on any board in the state in order to have people who care about protecting the environment on the board? I find that, well, do you think only people who belong to environmental organizations care about the environment?
Through the chair, Senator Pierce, probably not, but certainly of the many environmental groups in this state, many of whom have staff that are trained in a variety of, with expertise in a variety of different areas of environmental protection. And we have shown in the past that we can be very important contributors to task forces and boards that we have sat on. And I think we do bring a certain perspective and an expertise that, as the board is currently, currently configured in this bill, is not being represented. And I think if you're talking about doing resource development responsibly in respect to the environment, it only makes sense to have a professional environmentalist on the board.
I would just
must
point
be a
out.
Member of your organization before they're a professional environmentalist?
Chair Torgerson, I did not mean to imply it had to be a member of our organization. I suggested that it be appointed, that it be someone selected and appointed by an environmental organization.
Don't these larger companies have environmentalists on staff, environmental engineers and other things?
Through the chair, I think past experience will show that certainly these industries do have many folks that are well-trained in meeting environmental regulations, but I wouldn't necessarily characterize all of them as being environmentalists. They certainly have a responsibility to their corporation, to their industry that perhaps would transcend.
I'm one. I'm just not a preservationist. Senator Taylor.
Could you tell me, Susan, what's your annual budget for the Alaska Conservation
Board? Chair, Senator Taylor, I am the conservation advocate with that organization. I do not deal with the budget. I could get you that information possibly, and certainly our financial information that we report to the IRS that is reportable publicly is available also to you. Chair Senator Taylor, I don't know all the details of our IRS filing. However, for any nonprofit, the Form 990 which does give some basic financial information concerning an organization, is public record and is available through the IRS website.
Okay. If you can't tell me a ballpark within a couple thousand bucks of what your total budget is for either of your sister organizations?
Again, through the chair, I would prefer not to be quoting you numbers. That may be very inaccurate. I can check with my executive director in Anchorage and get to you that information.
Do you have any idea what the total budget may be in Alaska of the 60 different nationally organized environmental organizations that have offices within the state might be?
The chair, Senator Taylor, I have no idea.
Maybe
90.
You get that information from staff or somebody could check on that website and report back to us. I just wondered if it was a little bit not. My guess is it's probably a great deal more than that. And my other guess would be, and supposition would be, that that money doesn't come from this great group of 35,000 Alaskans you tell us about every time. It probably comes from some very large national foundations, and most of it comes from the lower 48. If I'm wrong with any of that, I hope you can ask a million questions.
Chair, Senator Taylor, financial donations come from a great variety. We have, you of course have foundation support. We have many, many, many thousands of Alaskans who contribute small amounts of their money to our organizations.
Yeah, I was only suggesting the vast majority of all your funds come from outside the state, and it does not come from Alaskans. And if I'm wrong on that report, then come back and correct me in front of this committee.
Why don't you just put that in the form of a request from the chairman that you write us a little letter, have your executive director or give us an overview of your finances, and then we can put this issue to bed. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to teleconference. We're going to start in Anchorage to Steve Kahn.
Despite
think one has to consider the ripple effect of such an endeavor as is proposed in this bill. I think the industries are deep pockets, and if they want to promote Alaska development, they are more than well positioned to do so. In the meantime, with our limited funds, we have a lot of work to do, a lot of serious problems. You're only too aware of those, and I would say that we focus on those and let these money decisions be made by those of you who are our elected officials. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It will go to Fairbanks, Mr. Randolph Veter.
Rudy Veter.
Rudy.
Good morning. That's Rudolph Veter, V-E-T-T-E-R.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello, everyone. I'm late. And the whole number 136 is good. It gives it another advantage of having the state itself officially promote the development in the state. And in regard to the person that spoke just a moment ago, he said that here's what Murkowski has said about the state having to do more of a share. In his annual address to the legislature, Senator Frank Murkowski advised that exclamation mark, the state must do its part to promote economic development of its own lands irrespective of the prevailing federal attitude and political landscape at the federal level. And I think this bill, I'm reading from the sponsor statement on Senate Bill 136. And in regard to grants to nonprofit funds, could a person be in industrial development, say mining or oil, and yet have another corporation that you could possibly get a grant? Would that be legal?
What kind of a corporation, Rudy?
Well, should I have a mining corporation? And then could I also apply for a grant to promote this 136 on a nonprofit, as a nonprofit group with another group? Myself and other people not included in my mining operation?
I don't believe so, but I'm not following you completely, but... you know, the bill is pretty clear. It has to be a nonprofit that's doing resource development.
Yes.
That doesn't automatically get a grant. That means they're eligible for a grant.
That's right.
And then they have to go before the board, and the board will make the decision of who gets what.
If you were participating though in mineral development, then you made an application for a grant in a separate group. And a nonprofit group, then would that be a conflict?
A nonprofit that's actually mining, or a miner that's not making any money that calls himself nonprofit?
No, it's under the sponsor statement here, it says that the board will have the authority to award grants to private nonprofit corporations for projects that have marketing, research, advertising, publishing, and information related to resource extraction.
I'm still not clearly following you. They have to follow the intent of the bill. So if they're a nonprofit and they're in to resource development, then they're eligible for a grant.
Yes.
Well, then the answer is yes to your question, but I'm not totally clear. As long as they meet the guidelines of the bill, they'd be eligible. Yes.
Okay, that's fine. I say pass number 136 because we do need someone within the state that we can go to directly and talk this over. Until now, we're going to go through a long, rough process with the Department of Natural Resources, and there doesn't seem to be any authority in the world. We just were encumbered by a bunch of regulations and loss of time. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Rudy, for coming out. And I understand the other feller left, but has some testimonies they're going to fax us. So that should be all we have on teleconference in Fairbanks. Is that correct? Thank you. That brings us back here to Juno Pamela Bow.
Senator Torgerson, members of the committee, my name is Pamela LeBole, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And we are in support of Senate Bill 136. And we think that the people of Alaska rely on the development and marketing of the state's resources to drive the economic engine of the state. And we think Senate Bill 136 is a responsible step towards assuring that there's a future of resource development. We've read and heard about the great number of grants, the millions of dollars that are coming into the
to promote
their interests, which are not along the lines of resource development. And no one is doing that for the state. Businesses individually doing that doesn't accomplish the same thing, because they can be viewed as having of speaking for themselves and just having a vested interest, where the state is a partner in the business of resource development in this state. We rely on the resource development to keep our economic strength. And so we fully support the I know that you, it's a mantra that you hear about everyone wanting a seat on the board. My folks said, well, since we were the, about five decades ago, the State Chamber was started for the purpose of promoting economic development and resource development, that perhaps our at-large position could be recommended for the board.
Questions? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Pamela. I guess I see a fundamental difference between money coming from any source, whether it's from organizations outside the state or business organizations for that matter, and being used for an educational purpose.
Yeah.
So like this, which provides that only general fund dollars are being used. And having said that, I guess I'm wondering then, why would we want to constrain ourselves in this bill to exclude some industries like the tourism industry or the fishing industry if, in fact, we're not using private dollars, but instead we're using public dollars that are out of the general fund?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, as I heard the answer to your question in the committee in earlier testimony. The other industries are not excluded from having grants to promote those industries and that development, the development of those industries. And there is no one doing this for the ones named in the bill at this point. And there is an effort ongoing for tourism and fishing through other avenues, and I'm comfortable that with the industries represented on this board, that the overall benefit to the state and the development of any and all of its resources would be a prime consideration in any grant coming to this grant proposal coming to this board. I think that the resource development interests would consider the benefits to the state of granting that money.
Thank you. Last, we have Carol Carroll.
Chairman, my name is Carol Carroll. I'm the Director of Administrative Services at Natural Resources, and this is Nico Bus. And
He does most of the budget and money work at the department. Mr. Chairman, the Department of Natural Resources has reviewed the bill and provided you some fiscal impact information, and we'd be happy to answer questions certainly about that. And also, we believe that it's the legislature's discretion for policies such as this, whether or not you would like to have a resource board. The department, if this legislation certainly passes, will do everything we can to assist it, and we have provided, like I said, the fiscal note for you folks, so it's our best estimate of how much the board would cost. And that concludes any testimony I might have.
Any questions on the fiscal note for Nico or for Carol?
The rest of us have the fiscal note.
Oh, really?
It's not.
Senator Elton, you had a question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Carol or Nico, I mean, I'm assuming, and I read through the bill, and I didn't see anything differently, but I'm assuming that the board would be subject to the Executive Budget Act?
Yes, subject to appropriation, and it's within the...
Could you help out just a little bit with the opportunities and the constraints that may happen when a board has to operate through the Executive Budget Act? I mean, how do you do RFPs? How do you do solicitations? How do you get the other things prior to agreement?
Through the chair, we would certainly, there has to be public notice. Certainly, you have to, when your grant agreements come in, there has to be some kind of review. And they certainly have to follow all of the stipulations for to make sure that the money is handled correctly. All of those that a prudent business person would do when you're handling the state's money.
Is the review process, is that a board review, or do you have to use state employees to do the review?
Through the chair, my perception of how this bill would work is that the people would be state employees, and they would provide some assistance to the board, but certainly wouldn't be making the decisions on which grants would be awarded.
I may be a little bit confused, Mr. Chair. So it would be state employees that are on the review panel, or it would be board people listening to state employees?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I know that when it says in the bill that the board members will ask for technical assistance from the departments, and that would certainly be provided, that the staff that would be at the board would certainly review and make certain that the grants were in a proper format, but they would not be making the decisions on which of the grants would be funded. They could certainly recommend, but they wouldn't be making the decisions, is my understanding. The board would.
I looked at the fiscal note, and one of the things that isn't on the fiscal note, and this question may be the product of knowing a little bit about another process, but one of the things that's absent on the fiscal note is any kind of an administrative charge. And the reason I'm asking about that is I know that, for example, the Department of Commerce assesses ASME a $68,000 a year administrative services charge, and that's to help with travel, to help with contracting and other things, but you don't have that.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that is built in, and it's an 8.1% indirect charge.
So that's charged off then back to the board?
It is indeed.
And one last question: How do you handle contracts? I mean, if money is carried forward into the next year, does the board have the ability to issue a contract where a portion of the expenditure will happen in one fiscal year and a portion will happen in the next fiscal year, for example? Or do you have to go back for reauthorization?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I believe that if a contract is a valid contract at the end of 1 year, that the money, until the contract is complete, the money continues with the obligation. That is correct?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Senator Taylor.
I was fascinated by your fiscal note. You made the assumption in it that DNR assumes those three funds, that being the permanent fund, school fund, and school budget, or constitutional budget reserve fund, would receive their full share of revenues and expansion for the amount appropriated to resource development budget from the general fund?
Not through the chair, yes, Senator Taylor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, where does the administration stand on this bill? Are they supportive of
it? Senator, we're neutral. We think it's the policy call of the legislature. That's the department's stand.
Other questions? There are none. Thank you. That's all we have to sign up to testify. Yeah, it's more of a finance issue than it is resources.
I moved the bill in some committee.
Object.
There's a motion to move SB 136. There is objection. You want to speak to
just very briefly. I think that there are some fundamental questions that I'd feel more comfortable settling here, and that's especially covering other resource. I also have a real problem. I don't think we're fixing something that's broken. We have done grants through the legislature. The most recent one is Arctic Power. And I'm comfortable with the public process that happens through the legislature when you do those specific grants for discrete projects. I think what we're doing is we're taking up to $2.6 million out of the general fund available for other programs, whether it's infant learning programs or pupil transportation. And we're saying that those general funds will be used for this. And what we essentially do is the only legislative decision is annually whether or not we do appropriate the money to it. I also have a problem. It's one thing to talk about marketing and advertising and promotions, but the fundamental difference here is that we're using state general fund dollars to do it. And it's not new state general fund dollars. There are state general fund dollars that we're just diverting from other purposes.
My only problem with it, I wish we would have done it a couple of years ago before TLUMP got all messed up and we shut down one of our more state. Senator Pearson.
Funding for programs like, I've forgotten the right name of it. Is it AMFAR? The mining curriculum that the state provides a portion of the money to go out to all of our school districts around the state. Annually, the supporters of that program have to fight through the budget process because there is no pot of money that out there that looks as though it's to be used for that sort of education process, both in-state and out-of-state. We appropriate money, frankly, from the general fund that goes to ASME. That's money that would come to the general fund if it weren't for the fact that it goes to ASME, or at least a portion of it, not all of it, but a portion of it. We appropriate dollars to the Tourism and Marketing Council that come out of the general fund. So we are doing that sort of marketing, generic sort of marketing in other areas. But it seems to me that if we don't continue to educate Alaskans on how you do it right, how you can be both an environmentalist, a conservationist, and at the same time believe in developing our resources in a proper manner, we're not going to have any revenue that's going to pay for the schools or for any other service with the potholes or any other services in the state. And we can't expect the multinational companies that do business in Alaska who have opportunities in other parts of the world to do that education process and that marketing process for us. We frankly should be out on the world stage advertising our oil and gas lease sales when they happen. DNR hasn't had the money to do that for years. So we sit here and complain that we don't have other companies coming to Alaska to partake in lease sales but we don't have the money in the department to help market those lease sales to try to get new people to come to Alaska so that we will have more competition in the state for the resources. So I see this as a logical extension, and I think the senator is correct that we are a little, or maybe a lot, too late in terms of some of our industries, like the timber industry, that is pretty much gone at this point. And I don't want to see that happen to the other industries that are healthy at the moment. And so to me, that's what I see the whole program being able to do, is both educating here in the state, but also having the ability to go outside and make sure that we do have competitive operators coming into the state, if indeed it's outside companies that come. And for some of our resources, we're never going to have a major or even, frankly, a large-sized, smaller oil company, I don't think, that's owned and operated in Alaska. But we'd like to see more of them come as they come for our lease sales. But we should have the opportunity to market those things, because we are an owner state. We're never going to get away from that. It's our resource, and if we want it to be developed, then we are going to have to do a part of that marketing.
Other comments? Senator Taylor.
I wouldn't be able to support this in another state where they did not have an ownership, literally, of the resource. Because it would be, I think, inappropriate. I think we have a trust obligation, a part of the public trust obligation, that we have to be good managers and good stewards of our resources. And you can't be good stewards of a resource if you don't have the money to manage it, protect it, enhance it. That is not going to be there available to you unless you do some marketing of that resource. Merely to sit back and hope that someone, entrepreneur, will come along and want to develop resources for you. It's fairly naive. If each of us look to our own trust obligation, as we also have as legislators, we have a significant trust obligation to the resources and the resource base of this state on behalf of the beneficiaries of that trust, the people of this state. And that's an entirely different perspective that is often taken. I would just remind you, I think the serious legal obligation we each have, and this flows right along with.
Here we have Senator Elton.
Wrap up. Just very briefly, because I know that there's probably just a fundamental difference here. I mean, I guess that I would suggest that there are several different ways of looking at this, and one of the ways we should look at it is this the appropriate way of doing it. I mean, I guess I would argue that over the last several years, we have done far beyond just meeting our legal obligation. Some of the things that come to mind, of course, are Arctic Power, which some people supported more than I did. Another would be the role that the legislature played in the merger last year. These kinds of things, I mean, the legislature has never stepped away from doing what needs to be done. I'd also suggest that there are other agencies that have been doing many good things when it comes to timber and mining and oil and gas. Department of Commerce and Economic Development is one of those. So if I can't convince you otherwise, I guess I would just suggest that we think that we think of the alternatives to this kind of a structure in doing it.
Here we have a motion to move 136 on committee. There is objection. Can we have a roll call, please?
Senator Elton?
No.
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Pierce?
Yes.
Yes. So by a 4-1 vote, Senate Bill 36 for the company fiscal note moves on to the next committee referral. That brings us next to Senate Bill 143. This is introduced by the Resources Committee also. It's an act authorizing the Department of Natural Resources to enter an agreement for pre-application pipeline permits. Short title. Well, Darwin will be joined by Patrick Coughlin, and they'll take our questions after you get the sponsor statement on the record.
Good Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Torgerson. I'll introduce the legislation, and I'm joined here by Patrick Coughlin, special consultant to the Senate Resources Committee, who will be here to answer questions for the committee. One of the legislature's priorities is commercialization of North Slope gas. Any sponsor of a pipeline project will have to obtain a right-of-way across state lands. This bill would authorize the state to be reimbursed for work performed by the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office in preparing to receive and process an application for a right-of-way lease. It also clarifies that an applicant must reimburse the SPCO for costs incurred in processing an application, whether or not the application is granted. Alaska Statute 38-35-140 provides that the lessee shall reimburse the state for all reasonable costs incurred in processing an application filed for a right-of-way lease. The SPCO has entered into an agreement with a lessee seeking to renew a lease. The lessee has agreed to reimburse the state for costs incurred before receipt of the renewal application. However, Legislative Legal Services has questioned whether existing law authorizes the state to be reimbursed for costs incurred before the receipt of an application. The SPCO anticipates that it will be asked to perform substantial work by prospective gas pipeline lessees this year in anticipation of filing applications later this year or early next year. Much of the cost of this work would clearly be reimbursable to the state if the prospective lessee actually had a pending application. It is important to ensure that the state is reimbursed for the significant cost that it will incur in performing work in anticipation and furtherance of the application process. Additionally, the SPCO in the past has required a prospective lessee to reimburse the state for costs incurred in processing an application, even if the application has not been granted. This bill would conform the law to existing practice between the SPCO and prospective lessees to make clear that the state must be reimbursed for the costs of processing an application, whether or not the lease is ultimately granted. Prospective lessees cannot expect the state to pay for services requested by them on routes that ultimately are not selected or on applications that may ultimately be withdrawn, suspended, or otherwise not granted. That finishes my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
If you have any to add, questions of one, Senator Elton.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a great idea. Patrick, can you tell me, I mean, this is all new to me. How much are we talking about? For this pre-application process, what could the cost, I know it probably varies with projects, so I'll make it project specific. What could it cost an applicant for an Alaska gas pipeline under the pre-application period identified here?
Senator Elton, through the chair, this hasn't happened in this large of amount before, and I think Mr. Britt, who I think is on the line, could better answer that question. But his fiscal note notes that they would expect that they will need approximately $4 million through the first half of the fiscal year, and that his best estimate is that at least 50% of that would otherwise be reimbursable. That tells you the magnitude.
Senator Pierce.
Thank you. I noticed that on page 1, line 9, the word reasonable is already in statute. Can you, for the record, so it'll be on the record, give us an idea of what's a reasonable cost versus one that we wouldn't expect to have reimbursed? Didn't you just say about half of the costs were reimbursed? Did I misunderstand what you said?
Senator Pierce, through the chair, I am just reading from the fiscal note. It's my understanding, based on my conversations with Mr. Britt, that basically 100% of his current budget is based on program receipts, and in essence, based on agreements that his office negotiates with lessees to cover the cost of running that office. I have not personally had any conversations with him about what expenses may or may not be included within the term reasonable. I think he'd be better able to
I don't think we have him online, but he is online? Yeah. Oh, he is.
These are written agreements?
Senator Pierce, through the chair, yes. There are, the purpose of the agreement, as I understand it, is to detail the scope of work between the Joint Pipeline Office and the prospective lessee, in this case, or an actual applicant. It's clear to the applicant as well as to the SBC what is being asked of them and how they're going to be compensated and what work they're going to be compensated for.
Bill, are you online, Mr. Britt?
Senator Torgerson, I am.
Okay. Maybe I'll redirect a question to you, and I'll put it a little bit more bluntly. How come you estimate you can only collect 50% of these application fees? Is that the average that you run on applications for other right-of-way leases, is 50%?
Senator Torgerson, no, sir. In normal circumstances, my office is entirely funded through programmer fees. The difference here is purely one of starting up a gas pipeline office that didn't previously exist and coordinating with our Canadian and federal counterparts. In the normal course of things, we would be working on a specific application with a specific project proponent, and 100% of our costs would go to that project proponent. We're frankly on terra incognita here. We really don't, this is unprecedented. We have a number of project proponents, and allocating costs between as many as 9 separate project, potential gas pipeline project proponents for costs that are likely to be applicable, whichever route comes in, is going to prove to be a bit challenging, I expect. I really won't know what percentage of the total cost will be reimbursable until I have completed negotiations with a suite of those project proponents.
Well, and I can't, I appreciate that explanation, because that's the way I understood it, too. I think Mr. Coughlin just more or less testified to that, too. But in any event, when I compare your O2 request for your pipeline office versus what I thought you'd be able to collect back, I find it almost impossible to make a correlation, because you're not putting line item numbers to that request. So, you know, I can't make heads or tails of it, but I know that this fiscal note's incorrect when you're saying 50% is all you're going to get back. Either that or, if it was me, I'd have a long discussion with you up in finance about what the other 50% was going to go for before I'd approve the fiscal note.
Yes, sir, Senator. I would expect to negotiate aggressively. As I said, we have everybody from Merck advocating for over-the-top routes, to the Port Authority, to the producers, to the Foothills, and simply figuring out what portion of gas pipeline office startups and what portion of interaction with our federal counterparts should be allocated to which project proponent. As I said earlier, I expect that to be a bit challenging, but we've been through this before, and we have a pretty good idea of how to allocate costs. I believe 50% is probably a likely low-end estimate.
Well, just a little advice for whatever it's worth. I wouldn't get too out, because I don't think you have a project for a few years down the line. I think the governor's jumping the gun by turning dirt by 03, and I don't think you'll find, at least not me, voting for a large appropriation bet upon somebody making announcements all over the world except for Alaska as far as development's concerned. So I think you got a long way to go before you get my vote on an additional increase for even setting this office up.
Senator, our challenge at this point is simply having enough resources to interact with the proponents. They are making more requests of my office than I have people and money to support at this point. Rather than being ahead of the curve, we're actually behind at this point.
Well, I understand that, but the intent of this bill is that you should respond to them, but they should pay you for it. Not us go out and make trips to Canada or wherever else you're talking about going. The Canadians, you ought to take something off their sheet. They're way ahead of you anyway. But in any event, you know, the intent is that these guys would come in, if they want you to do some research, then they pay for it. We couldn't have that much overhead cost till we actually have a project. Other questions? Anybody else want to testify? Thank you, Patrick. Anybody else? I do have Steve Kahn in Anchorage, if you're still there. He signed up for both bills. Anchorage, okay. I guess he's tired of waiting on. Might as well move her. Senator Tabor.
I move the Senate Bill 143 from committee with individual recommendation.
A motion to move the bill with the company fiscal note. Is there objection? Hearing none, that bill will go on to finance also. So with that, we do have a meeting on Wednesday, and the bills are posted on the basis. We'll stand adjourned.
So the lesson of the day is...